You're listening to All The Best. I'm Maddie McQueen, and I've been spending a lot of time on video calls. Video call drinks, video call card games, video call movie nights. But the thing is, you can't do everything over a video call. And if you schedule in enough of them, you'll eventually find yourself in a situation where someone's like, "Man, I've always wanted to go on an overnight hike, or do a screen printing class, or go to the opera." And then you're saying, "Yeah, we should do that," when everything goes back to normal. And then you put it on your "when everything goes back to normal" to-do list, which feels pointless because none of us know when everything's going back to normal. So how are we supposed to make plans for the future? This week's episode is about how our plans are changing in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. Chloe and Marlon were supposed to have a big wedding on the 5th of April. That obviously didn't happen. In the weeks leading up to lockdown, they were wrestling with the question of whether to cancel or bring the date forward. Chloe and Marlon did have a wedding, but it wasn't the wedding they had planned. A content warning: this episode contains swears.
So try to imagine this. It's a Sunday afternoon in early autumn, and you're set to marry your longtime partner, whom you've known since you're in year four. All of your immediate family and friends are there. You've been blessed with beautiful weather to be wedded in your parents' backyard of the family home. The rabbi would later be quoted as saying, "Although it was just immediate family and friends, there was no shortage of love and ruach." If it's been a little while since you brushed up on your Hebrew, ruach loosely translates to breath or wind or spirit, depending on the context. I had to look that word up. Anytime anyone gets married, it's a pretty happy occasion. It's joyous. There are big celebrations. Everyone looks beautiful. And at any wedding, particularly a Jewish one, there is lots and lots of dancing. But not today. Less than 3 hours ago, there was no wedding planned for today. Less than 3 hours ago, there was no certainty of a wedding at all. So what happened? What happened to the 280 attending guests? And what happened when you have to plan a wedding in 3 hours?
Could you, for me, say your full name?
Sure. Chloe Melissa Tovin.
Officially changed.
Officially.
How did you and Marlon meet? Tell me about that.
Well, we actually went to school together. And so we've known each other for a very long time, about 16 years. And we dated for a short time in about year 10 for a couple of months. And then, we were young, and so we went our separate ways. But we're still very good friends. And we went on holiday to Europe for a few months with a group of friends, and we got together while we were away. So we were always very close friends, and then it became more than friends.
So the wedding that you had planned, kind of talk me through that. Give me the full run through.
We'd invited 360 people, all from around the world. You know, we had people coming from South Africa and New Zealand, and we had a few people from interstate, Queensland and Sydney, and we had about 280 people attending. So 280 was actually our numbers down version.
I'm aware of how big your family is.
Yeah, so. I'm sure you are.
I think now would be a good time to note that Chloe, the lady on the phone, is actually one of my cousins. However, at this point in the phone call, I'm getting to find out about the wedding at pretty much the same time you are.
Jewish wedding. Yeah, it was going to be beautiful. We were going to have a ceremony in the garden and then dancing and speeches, and we were actually planning on leaving by boat. But that's all right. It didn't go that way.
The actual wedding. How did the idea come about?
Well, obviously in the past couple of weeks or 3 weeks, the coronavirus pandemic has just, you know, taken over our lives, and everyone's lives in all separate ways. But for us, it was obviously we were wedding focused, and we initially decided to bring our wedding forward about 2 weeks to the initial date. So we were initially going to have it on the 5th of April, and we were going to bring it forward to Tuesday evening, the 24th of March. And with every day like that went by, we were just sort of deciding what we were going to do. Were we going to have the big event that we'd always planned, or were we going to have to reduce our numbers? What, should we have it at all? And it was, and it really did change hour by hour. You know, 1 minute we were having it, next minute we weren't, and then 2 minutes later it was back on again. And it was, to be honest, quite emotional, just because, you know, it's just something so big in your life that you've just been looking forward to, and it's just so hard to adjust to the change every 2 minutes. So what we did is we were sitting around on Sunday, had another sort of back and forth that morning, and so we decided to meet with our parents just to figure out what we were going to do on the Tuesday, which was when the wedding was going to be. And we were hearing government announcements come out that potentially schools were about to close. So we thought, we're not sure we're going to make it to Tuesday. So we, looking at each other, being like, what are we going to do? Should we move it forward to Monday? And then I think one of the parents looked up at us and was like, what's everyone doing tonight? And this is about 2:30. And we're like, well, I'm free, but, you know, is the rabbi free? Is anyone free?
The wedding has already been moved up 2 weeks, from the 5th of April to Tuesday the 24th of March. And now at 2:30 on a Sunday afternoon, they are thinking about moving it to 5:30 that same Sunday afternoon. Oh, and by the way, that Tuesday they'd initially moved the wedding to was the same day that PM Scott Morrison announced restrictions on public gatherings and weddings were reduced to no more than 5 people. Sometimes, timing really is everything.
Marlon got on the phone to the rabbi and he said he was free at 6:30, and that was the only thing we really needed. Everything else sort of fell by the wayside as to whether we needed them or not. You know, we had photographers and videographers and musicians and hupa hire people all booked. But we thought, well, let's go ahead with it, and whoever can come can come. We'll have only our very close, immediate family there, maybe anyone who just we absolutely have to have. And to be honest, that was a very difficult decision to make, because there were a lot of people who weren't there that mean a lot to Marlon and I. And but at the end of the day, we just wanted to make the wedding happen. And so we just, and eventually just had it with our grandparents and our grandparents' kids, so my aunties and uncles and us. And Marlon doesn't have any immediate family in Australia, save for his grandmother, who's unfortunately, she's well, but she's in a nursing home, so she's currently in isolation, not able to leave. So he didn't have any family there, but what's my family is his family. So about, you know, 4:30, I sort of removed my, 4 o'clock, I was sort of like, okay, I'm going to go get my makeup done. And, you know, even having the makeup artist show up was amazing. And next thing I knew, I hear the photographer in the background. I'm like, oh, I didn't know he was coming. And then I see the videographer. And anyway, I was shocked. But it was amazing, you know, very special. And even we had, we didn't have flowers, and one of my bridesmaids was driving around with her mum, and they ended up getting these beautiful bouquets. They got them made up at a florist. And, yeah, like we literally had everything we ever could have wanted at a wedding, except for our big extended families. But it was a beautiful, intimate affair.
But here is where it gets really special. And to understand why it's special, there are two things I'll need to explain. The first being that during the ceremony of a traditional Jewish wedding, the soon-to-be married couple stand under what is called a chuppah. The second is that Jewish men usually wear a prayer shawl, and that is called a tallit. That goes over both shoulders. Now, a chuppah can be extremely hard to find on such short notice. So what do? They cut down 4 branches from the parents' backyard to act as the corner posts of the chuppah, and used Marlon's late grandfather's tallit as the cover. That is beautiful. But there's still a sense of craziness to this entire day. Even with such beautiful moments of a community rallying together in a time of crisis, the reason they're doing so still lingers. There is quite literally a global crisis forcing their hands to make this day happen.
During the ceremony, were you guys keeping like the 1.5 meters away from each other, kind of, or at least trying to?
Yeah, so we certainly, well, Marlon and I, you know, we were holding hands, so, but I think living together, I think that's allowed. But we were certainly having our bridesmaids and groomsmen you know, socially distanced apart, and our guests socially distanced apart amongst the crowd. But we had it outside as well, just to get the fresh air going and to keep our guests to have plenty of space.
So you've gone into it a little bit already, but how are the traditions of a Jewish wedding altered for this occasion and the unusual circumstances?
I think for us, the main difference was chorus, which is like the Jewish dancing. I never thought that I would have a wedding, or no Jewish wedding that I've ever heard of doesn't have chorus. And it's where the, you know, very excited dancing with everyone from the event would definitely get involved. And it's a lot of fun, and it gets really hot, and it's just a beautiful coming together of all your family and friends. And obviously, given the current situation, we decided not to do that. So I think for us, the absence of dancing was a big highlight of the current circumstances.
Could I get you to talk about the rabbi for a second? Like, how did you, is he your local rabbi? Have you known him for a long time?
The rabbi that we used was Rabbi Glassman from St. Kilda Shul. St. Kilda Shul was my family's shul growing up. My parents got married in St. Kilda Shul, and I've always gone there with my bubab, my grandmother, on Jewish holidays and that sort of thing. So that's why I felt a connection to the shul.
Was there anything that you, like, that he said on the day that really stood out to you?
I think he goes, I've never had to... never confidently been able to do a Jewish wedding without a mic. And I think for us, like, you know, for me coming from such a big family, I think that was like, whoa, this is really small. Because, like, this would have been one of the smallest weddings he's ever done. And I think just, like, that's just a mate, like, wow to me. Just, like, I can't believe we ended up having such a small wedding.
It also felt, from my end, more relaxed. I don't know how Chloe, I'm sure Chloe and Marlon maybe didn't feel as relaxed because of all the pressure, but it felt relaxed in the sense that I didn't feel like I was performing in front of a large audience. It was more just being there for them and giving them the best ceremony that I could give them.
This is Rabbi Yaakov Glassman of St. Kilda Shul, and most importantly, the same rabbi that conducted Chloe and Marlon's wedding.
But you said it may have just been immediate family in the backyard, but there was no shortage of love and ruach.
Yes.
Do you feel that in itself is almost an accurate reflection of what we are currently experiencing at the moment, especially during Passover?
Definitely. I mean, you know, the Pesach Seder, the Passover Seder, is the most widely practiced ritual in the Jewish world, even more so than Kippur, which means that people... so in families and extended families, and these are sort of intergenerational customs that have gone on for forever, traditions. And this was the first year since biblical Egypt, right, where it was only immediate family in the home. The very first Passover Seder, which occurred, you know, almost 3,500 years ago, God instructed the Jewish people directly, do not leave your house, stay home, every family each to their own. And it was just immediate families. And we reenacted that this year for the very first time, which is really quite remarkable if you think about it. You know, for 3,500 years, we've reenacted as it was on the very first day. And I suspect that in this context, a lot of families, assuming, of course, that it's a loving family environment, will have bonded and connected much more so now than they had in the past. And I think that's a beautiful thing. So Ruach literally translated means spirit, but it means, colloquially, it means the vibes, you know, the positive vibes, the good vibes. I think this is a really good time to be able to, because most people do have a bit more time on their hands now, to really try and connect back to our own core, to our own soul, to our own inner spirit, because I think that the distractions of the day-to-day hustle in ordinary circumstances can be so overwhelming that we just go through life sometimes as a conveyor belt. But equally important is the idea of connecting to others in a supportive way, right? So I'm not necessarily talking about connecting to others in a social sense online for pastime and entertainment. I'm actually talking about caring for other people, because there are a lot of people who are doing it tough at the moment, who are feeling quite isolated, who may not have immediate family living with them. And, you know, to sit through weeks and weeks of that kind of isolation can be very, very challenging to a person's, to their ruach and to their sense of self and to their mental health and emotional health.
We just celebrated Easter and Passover, and for many people, it would have been the first time without extended family around, or maybe they were alone. But now more than ever, we have an opportunity to turn to one another and lend a helping hand, or maybe even try to understand each other a bit better. Whether that's by driving around town, searching for wedding flowers and a chuppah because you've decided you want to throw a wedding that afternoon, or that's by understanding that together, we will make it through to the other side.
So that literally took 3 hours. That was from 2:30 to 5:30 and you're go.
Yeah, like, look, we don't muck about, Eddie. Like, we get shit done. And it was just this amazing coming together of the community and all our people. And we had this most beautiful, intimate wedding ceremony that I never thought in a million years I could ever have because of the large family that I had. So it was special. It was different. It was something that I never thought I would have. But at the end of the day, for us, it was just about getting married and about me and Marlon and just making it happen. So we're really happy that we did have the opportunity to get it done, and we know that even if it was a couple of days later, we would not have been able to do it given government restrictions and how the coronavirus has come about. So we consider ourselves very lucky for what we did get to have.
Well, Colette wanted me to tell you that she looks so beautiful in the dress and she hopes you get to wear it again.
Well, I think I consider myself very lucky that I might have the opportunity to wear my wedding dress twice. I don't think many brides can say that. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for that one. But that's very beautiful. Thanks, Colette.
I'll let you go. Enjoy each other.
Thanks, Ed.
And I'll hopefully see you soon. We can FaceTime.
Okay. Be well.
All right. Love you.
To Colette. Love to you. Bye. To you.
Bye.
It may have been just the immediate family in the backyard, but there was no shortage of love and ruach. I would like to thank Chloe and Marlon Plavin for allowing me to share their beautiful story, and I wish them good luck, or mazel tov, on their nuptials and their future.
Ladies and gentlemen, on this stunning day, in a stunning venue, we gather to witness and experience the chuppah, the wedding of a stunning couple. Chloe and Marlon, it's been a long time coming, not that long, but long enough that we're here.
That story was produced by Eddie Goldsmith. The supervising producer was Ryan Pemberton. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us at allthebestradio.com. We'll pair you with one of our supervising producers to help make your story. About a month ago, before restrictions were in place, producer Zasha Rosen visited a friend. They both knew they weren't going to see each other for a long time. They had dinner, hung out, and watched trashy TV. But in the middle of that, Zasha got out his recorder and he asked her a question.
So we're sitting here, like, not a full 1.5 meters, about mm-hmm. a meter apart from mm-hmm. each other because we'd run out of couch otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But we are distancing.
We are distancing.
I'm Zasha Rosen.
I'm Anna.
So you had a close call with cancer not long ago, no?
Yes.
And Like, I was just thinking about all the people who are sitting here, like, waiting for whatever is starting to start, kind of like waiting the night before a battle to to see what happens to you the next day. And I was just thinking about how many times you have sat and waited for test results. And and they've, like, so far anyway, they've all turned out good.
Like, post-diagnosis test results?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they have. Like, the closest thing that I had to a bad result was my oncologist realizing that I had no vitamin D because she told me not to go outside and I had taken it really seriously. And I think my B12 was low. That's the closest thing I've had to a bad result, yes.
And so you had to go through this, like, far from your family?
Yeah, yeah.
And you survived, and, like, as far as I can tell, as a friend, you've done really well. And I was just wondering, like, with all the scared people out there, all the people waiting to find out what happens the next week or next month or, God forbid, the next half year or a year, like, waiting for the wave to break, I was wondering if you had any words of wisdom for people on how to wait for that kind of result.
I can definitely share the things that I did and the things that I found useful. So there are, like, a number of stages that you go through to get a cancer diagnosis. There's a, like, trip to the GP, and then there's, like, an ultrasound, and it'll be different for different cancers. It was probably, like, stage four was the day when I knew I was going in for a diagnosis, and I practiced getting told that I had cancer. So I practiced receiving, like, a negative or positive diagnosis, and I just practiced it over and over so that when it happened, I would be able to either be happy that it wasn't the case or have, like, considered those words before, so I wouldn't just slip into shock. And I found that really helpful. It sounds kind of kooky, but I would, like, I made a list of all the words that I was scared of hearing, and I practiced saying them and repeating them back and saying, like, yes, I have cancer. And that was really, really helpful because it meant I could move past the first step and ask my next set of questions, which is the other thing that was really helpful to me, was, like, finding accurate data. Finding data that I trusted and talking to doctors that I trusted was really, really important.
And when you got the diagnosis, did it work?
Yeah. I mean, it's a funny thing to say because you don't get two goes at it, so I can't test version one against version two. But I really think so. Like, the fear that I had beforehand, the panic of, like, what might be, felt very different too. It felt like I was confronting it by saying, okay, practice what's going to happen. If you are diagnosed with cancer, practice what's going to happen and what that's going to be like. Because initially, just thinking about it was, like, mind-blowing, mind-contorting. I felt like I was facing that down, like I was having a stare off with it. I was like, okay, so what are you really afraid of? You're afraid of having cancer because you don't think that you can handle it and you don't know what the future will look like. And that's where the practice came in. And sort of even just getting my mouth used to saying the words, getting my mouth used to saying, yes, I have cancer, to the point where when my GP told me, my wonderful GP told me, after she'd given me the diagnosis, I told her that I'd done this practice thing. She was like, ah, yes, that's why you said, yes, I have breast cancer. I was like, yes, yes, it is. She was like, okay, great.
Have you been doing anything similar to think about the virus?
A little bit. I'm trying to be proactive about reading, and, like, I'm lucky enough to have a couple of friends that are working on their preparedness groups at their place of work, and that lets me process what things might look like and not assume that I know what happens tomorrow, but plan for a couple of different tomorrows.
Kind of rehearsing for what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, rehearsing for what's going to happen. I feel like cancer taught me to take a bunch of health precautions. So I started overly cleaning my hands and hand sanitizer. And so I took exactly how I looked after myself during chemotherapy and started doing that probably a month ago. Although I'm worried about getting ill, for me it's a very different proposition to cancer. Like, I don't want to be flippant because it's a pandemic, but it's less personally scary.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Stay safe.
You too. And we have not hugged.
No, we haven't. That's
weeks.
Really weird. Yeah.
But I love you.
Yeah, you too.
Zasha Rosen produced that story. As best as medicine can say, Anna is now cancer-free. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. This episode was mixed and compiled by Alina Godwin. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Lee Robinson. Matilda Fay is our Social Media Producer. And I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and we're made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. You can find all of our episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so subscribe.